We're in the middle of Parshas Vayera by Ravi. It's interesting to know that the Pasuk records that Moshe was 80 years old when the Makos began. And we know that the Makos took a year, meaning they began sometime around Pesach and Nisan, and they ended sometime around, we know they ended on Pesach. And that would put Moshe Rabbeinu at age 81, right? We know Moshe was born in Adar, so if in this Nisan where the Makos begins he's 80, then when the Makos ends he's 81. And if the Jews were in the desert for 40 years, then Moshe Rabbeinu should have died at 121 and not at 120. And we know Moshe Rabbeinu was 120 years old. The Torah records that.
They round so, it up usually, no?
What?
Torah usually rounds it up.
Oh, so there are a few options as to how to understand that.
120 in 8 months.
Does it mean that over here the Torah rounded when said he was 80 years old, it means he was 79, but the Torah sometimes calls the numbers one up. When it's one off, when it's 39, the Torah will call it 40. When it's 79, the Torah will call it 80. Does it mean that? Or maybe something else, but it's a question we should think about. So Hashem tells Moshe and Aaron, when Paro asks you for a sign, so Moshe, you tell Aaron, take the staff and throw it before Paro, it will become a tanin. What is a tanin? So tanin is either the largest fish in the sea, whatever that is.
What plague is this, huh?
This is before the plagues.
Oh.
And they're going to walk into Paro.
Okay.
Or it's some kind of snake or some kind of crocodile. We don't know exactly what a tanin is.
But everyone agrees it's a snake.
No, it could be a huge fish. It could be some kind of huge fish.
So I don't know how a fish makes sense, though.
If it's a crocodile?
Okay, a crocodile.
Some kind of...
Something that can move on land. A crocodile, I think, is defined as a lizard or...
Is it a...
Or an alligator is defined as a reptile. A reptile. Right, but a lizard is a reptile.
Moshe and Aaron come to Paro, and Aaron throws a staff before Paro, and it turns into a tanin. So Paro assumes, okay, he's doing witchcraft. I got my people who know witchcraft. Paro calls all his wise men and tells them, go ahead, show them your stuff. They do the same thing. The Medrash says that we focus on the word. It says Paro called his wise men, his mechashvim, and they too did it. So you can understand they too did it, just like Moshe and Aaron did it. Our sages say that it means... they too did it, meaning not only the wise men and the mechashvim were able to do it, but he called in all the little kids and he said, go ahead, you show them you could do it too. So he said, what, you're trying to impress me with that? Even the little kids in my house know how to do that. So Mitzrayim was a place where they had a lot of black magic and all kinds of other things. I'm using the term black magic. It's really a mistake, because when we say black magic, you infer all kinds of things you saw in movies. We don't know exactly what they had there. We know that there's strength that God put in this world that comes from a pure source, and there's strength that comes from an impure source. We discussed this a little bit by Lavan, I think, that Lavan had truffim. What are the truffim? So one
is
understanding...
Is that the same thing by Lavan? No?
I don't think so.
Didn't the Chumash use the same exact wording? Mm-hmm.
I love and all we have are truffim. So truffim, we say, are either some kind of object that's created correlating to certain stars at certain times that has certain strengths and it could tell you things from the future. Or there's a medrash that says that they used to take a firstborn, a person who was the firstborn, and they'd slaughter him. And they take his skull, and then they'd write some kind of incantation, and they had a whole procession, and then that skull would talk. And they could find out from that skull all kinds of things. And Rachel knew that if she leaves that skull in her father's house, then her father's going to ask it, where are Yaakov and the family? And it'll give it away, and that's why she took it. So we find inferences...
That's considered about Zara, though?
Did I say about Zara? I said truffin.
No, but that's what it doesn't say. That's what Rachel took.
It says she took truffin. It says Elokai. It says, my God. Lavan called it my God. So... we don't know exactly what it was. Truffim probably has something to do with the human form. It could be an idol. It could be some other human form.
But God wanted them to reproduce the first two plagues. So so that they won't say...
Wait, we'll get to that. Wait. We're not yet holding by the plague. Here we find that Pharaoh has chachamim, he has wise people, he has mechashvim. What is a mechashif? So we know the Torah says that mechashifa lot chaye, a witch you shouldn't leave alive. A witch has to be killed. What's a witch? So that's a large discussion. What is a witch? And we're not talking about the Salem... we're not talking about Salem witch trials. We're talking about other things. They had certain powers they were able to do.
Do this with their nose without touching it.
No.
That's you.
You witch.
Yeah, I understood. We'll get to it if you want. Just a second.
No, go up on a tangent.
The Gemara in Kiddushin records the following story about Rav Chanina Bar Papi. Remember this because it's going to be relevant to tomorrow's class. The laws of Yichud. Rav Chanina Bar Papi, Tavateya Himatronita. It was a very important Roman woman, and she called him in before her. And when he was there, she demanded that he have an illicit relationship with her. He saw he can't get out of it. Amar milta, he said some kind of secret words. Umale nafshei shichna. And he became covered with boils. So he wasn't very good looking anymore. So he thought that would be enough.
Oh, wait, I know how that applies to you.
Avda hi milta, so she said her incantation. Ve'itzin, he was cured. He's good looking again. Arak tasha behahu bebani. He went and he hid himself inside a furnace. Inside some, it wasn't really a furnace. It was a room where they heated up the water for the bathhouse. The chihavu aylin batrein. That if people would walk into that house, it was a house where they knew there were some kinds of shadim, some kind of spirits that damage. And even though ordinarily we know that if two people encounter a spirit, then he doesn't want to touch them, he stays away. But we say that there are places where the spirits say, we rule. Even if you come in as two, we'll damage you. So this was such a place that even if two people would walk in, and we have a rule that by day they don't like doing their things, they like to rule by night. So this was a house that if even two people would walk in, afiru bimama, even by day, have a mitzuki, they'd get damaged. So he preferred to enter into such a place where he'll have to put up with all kinds of spirits and who knows what they'll do to him, rather than have to put up with this woman who wanted him to sin. He got out safely. The machal, the next day, amu le rabanan, so the sages asked him, man natra, who is protecting you? How'd you get out of there alive? Amaluhu, so he told them, Shnei nosei kesar shamuni kol alayla. There were two soldiers there. They're the head bodyguards of the Caesar, and they're very powerful men. They were watching me all night. So he was a humble person. He didn't want to tell them God was protecting me. I'm a righteous person. So he said, you know, I was lucky. I walked in. There were these huge bodyguards there. You're talking about sumo wrestlers. The chief bodyguards of the Caesar, they were there. So I guess the spirits couldn't touch me.
Yeah, okay.
So they didn't buy that. So the sages told him, Amrule, they told him, you got out of there alive. You had such a miracle. Shema dvar erovam bali adcham nitzaltai menu. Must be that someone tried to cause you to sin with arayos. And you were saved from it. You got away from it. And that's why you merited to have such a miracle, to walk out of such a place alive. So what went on here? What does that mean? He said an incantation, he got covered with boils. She said something and they became clean. And there are many, many Gemaras. The Gemara says you shouldn't wipe yourself in the bathroom with something that the fire could burn. Anything that's flammable, if you wipe yourself with that, then
okay.
Even... Wait, it's not fair. The Halacha says that we say in the Mishnah in Pirkei Avos, Shiva Dvar Begolim and Shiva Bechacham. So one of the things that a smart person is supposed to train himself is, let someone else just finish a sentence. Give me just a second. The halacha says if you wipe yourself with something that's flammable, then if a woman's doing kshafim, even out in the seas, somewhere on an island, she's doing some kind of witchcraft, and she's letting these dangerous things into the air, they'll all come straight to you. You have a vacuum.
You still won't, right?
So wait a second. So we all use toilet paper today. That's pretty flammable. So today we're not so concerned over these things. There are a lot of things today. We don't see people doing witchcraft today, and we're not concerned about it. So all of these concepts are foreign to us. But in Chazal's time, we see that these things happened. They knew what was going on. There's a lot of that. You have to know how to do witchcraft. There are forces in the world. There are forces that come from pure sources, and there are forces that come from impure sources. If you want, remind me when we reach Parshas Balak, we could have a whole class just on where did Balak get his strengths from. There are long midrashim about that, where the strengths of impurity come from. But this is a tangent. We'll get it. It's towards the summer, yeah.
Can we one day try and do what they say in bracha? Is it bracha? To
see the shaitan?
To see the demons? We gotta find a black cat. Firstborn black cat, female.
That's right, we'll get to that. So Paro calls his wise men and his mechashvim, the people who know how to do some kind of witchcraft, and they could do the same thing. We don't know exactly what strengths they had. They each throw their staff and it turns into a tanin, and then it turns back into a staff, and then Aaron's staff swallows up their staffs. And that was a greater miracle, because a staff usually doesn't have a mouth. How does a staff swallow other staffs? And Paro isn't interested. Paro tells them, I have a city that's filled with magic. You're going to come and impress us with magic? It's like you walk into a city made of tevin, of straw, and you say, let me sell you my straw. Everyone has straw. So Hashem tells Moshe, okay, Pharaoh's heart is heavy. He's not willing to let you go. Go in the morning. Pharaoh's going out to the waters. He's told the Egyptian people that he's a god. He never goes to the bathroom. We all know that early in the morning when no one's around, he goes to the Nile. He goes to the bathroom. And then that's how he tricks them. He says he never goes. So you go when he's there and go stand before him and take that special staff with you. Now, what was that special staff? So Chazal say that was a special, special staff that was still from ancient times. That was a staff that God created Bein HaShemoshos. It was created on Friday afternoon before, as God was creating the world.
He gave it to Adam, didn't he? Adam.
Yeah, it was given to Adam. There's a whole medrash how it continued until it was...
Yisro's garden, in the middle of Yisro's garden.
Oh, very good.
Yeah,
so, Yisro, when we said...
He reads the medrash says all
very
the
good,
animals.
Very good. So, he'll know how to tell his kids. Yisro was one of Paro's advisors, and Yisro took it from Paro, and then he put it in his garden, and then when he tried to take it out again, he couldn't. And no one could take it out of the garden until Moshe Rabbeinu came and took it out like nothing. So Yisro said, if you could take it out, it means it's meant for you. And on the staff, there were inscribed different things. One of the things that was inscribed were the letters Ditzach, Adash, Ve'achav, which are the letters that correspond to the 10 makos. We'll have to discuss if those letters are more than just a sign. If God inscribed them in a special staff that He created Friday afternoon, chances are there's more to it than just an acronym. Yeah.
I know in the Haggadah there's a separate part where it's just you just read the words, but I thought there was a story built into the Haggadah how it ended up on the, that it was written on the staff.
In the Haggadah it doesn't say, but there might be a medrash how it got there. I don't know. Maybe Michael knows.
You read this stuff seriously?
No, seriously. Just said it. I didn't go into details about it. Just said more about the acronym. That's it. But what it actually meant, I don't remember recalling anything besides that it was the initials in the place.
Okay. So God tells Moshe, tell Pharaoh that I'm gonna hit the water. In the Ya'ar, in the Nile, it's going to turn to blood. All the fish is going to die. The Mitzri people won't be able to drink water from the Nile. And Hashem tells Moshe and Aaron to go. So Moshe and Aaron go. And then Aaron lifts his hands over the waters of Egypt. And everything turns to blood. First plague, dam. Notice that Aaron is the one that performs it, not Moshe. Moshe, when he was an infant, was placed in a casket in the Nile. And the Nile sustained him. That's how he remained alive. So he had Akar Satov, he recognized the good that he got from the water, and therefore he wasn't the one to turn the water to blood.
Well, hold on, Hashem actually said, tell your Aaron.
Right, Hashem told Moshe, tell Aaron, right. From here we see that we're supposed to have akar satov, recognition for good that's done to us, even to inanimate objects. Chazal taught us, bara deshasis minei, a well that you drank from, lo tishti veikola, don't throw in it a clod of earth, don't throw in it a rock. You just drank from that well. What are you kicking it for? Today's world, we're not used to that, but Chazal taught us that a person is supposed to be so refined, so appreciative, even to the mitzrim, the Torah taught us we're supposed to be appreciative. Imagine if someone told you, that the Torah says, you lived in the Egyptian land for so many years, it's true they treated you not well, but you lived in their land. Bottom line, lo tita'ev mitzri, you're not allowed to hate, to be disgusted with an Egyptian, ki gerayit be'altso, you were a stranger in their land. You lived there in a time when you had nowhere to go, there was a famine, you went down to Egypt, there were years where they saved you, you can't hate mitzrim, the mitzvah in the Torah. So Moshe Rabbeinu over here expresses this tremendous akar satov to the water that saved him, and he doesn't turn it to blood. Aaron turns it to blood. There's a medrash that the mitzrim had to buy their water from the Jews, because every time water would enter a mitzri hand, it would turn to blood. It was in a Jewish hand, it turned to water. So they'd... So that's the Medrash says. They take a straw and try to drink through. They had reeds of straws. And in his straw came out blood. And his straw came out water. So the Medrash says if they paid for it, if they got paid money for it, then they got good water. And that's how they got water. Because the Pasuk says that the Mitzrim, the Paro's Egyptians, Paro's men were able to do the same thing. They also were able to turn water into blood. So the question is where they get water from.
What do you mean they were able to turn water into blood?
They also, Paro called his magicians, turned water into blood.
But they couldn't turn it back.
Wells and they were able to turn water.
So according to some opinions, only the Nile turned to blood. If they dug wells, they were able to get water. Yeah, there are different opinions. We also mentioned before that according to some opinions, the Jews didn't have a problem with this Makkah. But the Torah only says by the fourth Makkah, by Arov, that the Jews were saved, that the wild animals didn't touch them. The Torah does not record that in the Makkah of Dam, the Jews weren't affected. It says all the water turned to blood. And that's why there are some opinions.
I think they specified in the later Makkahs that we will, this plague will identify between the Jews, but it doesn't say anything about that in the first place, so we can assume.
That's what the Ibn Ezra says. What you just says, what the Ibn Ezra says, that if the Torah didn't specify it,
they probably
then,
the same thing.
Right, that the Jews also had to suffer through these the first three makos.
But that that doesn't make sense because then Hashem's whole purpose, because there's a lot of purposes of why Hashem did ten makot and what was like we read in the Haggadah the calculations that Eli did and for the years that the suffering and how hard the work felt. They did the whole calculation right after the Sachar Dama, and I should read that whole paragraph, and it does the calculation of like, oh, there's 50 on the water and right and all that. So it doesn't make sense that he would punish the Jews again it doesn't make sense that he's punishing both the Jews and the Mitzrim when the plagues were directed solely to the Mitzrim or to Torah.
Could be, but it's possible also that the Makkah of Dam was to teach the people a lesson that the Nile is not a god. One of the gods they served was the Nile. The Nile was their source of sustenance. So they'd pray to the Nile, just like we see when Yosef came home that day that Potiphar's wife wanted to take him. Where was everyone going? That was the first day that the Nile was supposed to rise. So everyone was going to pray to the Nile. And Potiphar's wife said, I'm not feeling well, I'm staying home. She stayed home and she had other intentions other than getting better. She wanted Yosef. Yosef wasn't going because he was Jewish. So we see the Mitzrim served the Nile, and we mentioned on Tuesday that the Jews in Egypt were serving idols just like the Mitzrim.
Right.
Which means that the Jews were serving the Nile as well. We're going to see that the ten makos are a procession of bringing the Jewish people to recognize they're their own people, and God is their God, and they're supposed to serve Him. We discussed that they didn't want that. They wanted to be like the Egyptians.
I remember.
So then, with that understanding, we could understand that God is first showing the Jews also, you don't even have control over the water you drink. I'm controlling the world.
But at the same time, you could say He's only doing this to take them out and to punish the Mitzrim for putting them through hard work. Because that's what I mean, they all say that the plagues were done to punish Paro.
Okay, so if you'll go with that understanding,
almost
so
every commentary usually that's what they write is that it was more of a punishment. I don't see where they even have a fight against that. Okay, fine. So in the first three plagues, okay, he's trying to prove God's existence, but he's not going to punish the Jews at the same time necessarily because he wants to take them out. That's just going to.
This is a long philosophical discussion which we really shouldn't have now. What was the purpose of punishing? Why does God punish? That's a large sociological discussion. Why should society punish? Is it vengeance? Is it to cause people not to do it in the future? Is it a deterrent? Is it what's the purpose of the punishment? So we have to ask ourselves, why does God punish? What's the purpose of punishment in the Torah? And that's a separate discussion. You're coming out of an understanding. This is what the Egyptians did, so now it's payback time. I'm not sure that we have to understand that way. So, okay, there are variables, and for sure what you're saying fits with some understandings. Certain understandings certainly go with what you're saying. Yeah?
I was just wondering, is it possible that the plague where they where we put the lion's blood on the door, or other, since this is dealing with the things that the Eden might have been worshipping, is it possible that that plague was almost like a test that the one is later in the end, they want to see if the
100%? Yeah, 100%. We're going to discuss that next week. When God told them to slaughter the Paschal offering, the Korban Pesach, God told them, take the god, and that's why the Pasuk begins, Mishchu. Pull your hands away from serving that animal as a god, Ukhu lachem, and rather take it for yourself as an offering. And we're going to discuss that it was a much greater test than just serving that animal. They had to barbecue it. Everyone smells it throughout Egypt. They had to barbecue it whole, so that if an Egyptian walks into the house, he can't say, no, this isn't the lamb, this is whatever. No, it's whole. So everyone could always see what it is. We're going to discuss the different aspects of why it was an even greater test of faith for the Jewish people to bring the Korban Pesach. Yeah, but we're building up to that. So we're starting with the Nile. Yeah.
But also there's a lot of unfortunate say that Jews also died, and firstborns of Jews also died in Machap Rechorot.
No.
They didn't do the Pesach offering.
Yeah, show me. That I never
saw. I thought I read that before. The ones that did, what, they didn't die if they didn't do it?
It says that those who weren't interested in continuing with the redemption passed away during Makas Choshech. That I heard.
Dark.
Let's say that they just didn't want to do this last one.
80% died.
That's very true. A lot of them did die during...
20%?
So let's say, you find the source, if you saw that. I never saw such a thing. I think
so
the Pasuk seems to say not that way.
Basically just took away the free speech or free will, and then you're not going to do a Pesach offering.
Or else maybe the Jews that remained were on that level after seeing 9 Makos. We see that even the Mitzrim didn't want to mess.
Some of the Mitzrim, so the Mitzrim that left Mitzrayim, they were involved with the Pesach offering.
Let's discuss the Pesach offering next week. That's next week's parasha, so we'll get there.
Yeah.
So this plague lasted 7 days, the Makkah of Dam, and again Paro gets forewarned, release my nation, they have to serve me, and if you don't, then I will cause Tzfardeim to come to your land. And Tzfardeim are either frogs or crocodiles.
Not funny, it's the second time.
We don't know exactly what Tzfardeim are.
Okay,
and
how do you say a French guy in Hebrew?
Sorfati.
Sorfati.
So God tells them there are going to be a lot of Tzfardeim. Two different midrashim how it worked. One Medrash says that there was one huge frog that came out, and the Egyptians tried to beat it up. Every time they beat it, more little frogs came out. One Medrash says that they just kept on coming out. One called out all his friends, and they all came. And God warns them, they're going to be in your beds. They're going to be in your homes, in your ovens. So they ran into the ovens. The Chazal tell us that in the time Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, the time when the first temple was destroyed and the Jews were in exile, and the king Nebuchadnezzar gathered all the people to Bikat Dura, to a special valley where Jews were buried. Different opinions which Jews were buried there, either the Jews that had tried leaving Egypt before the redemption, or other Jews. We don't know exactly which Jews were buried there. He meant to send a sign to the Jews, and he warned them, I built this huge idol, and when you hear the sign, we're going to play music, and when the music goes, you all have to bow, and those of you who don't bow will get killed, will be thrown into this burning furnace. And there were three people who were from his advisors, Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah, and they were Jews, and they didn't bow. And then he called them before him, and he said, I heard you didn't bow, I'm going to give you one more chance. Who's going to save you from my hand? And Nebuchadnezzar ruled over the whole world. He said, who's going to save you? So they said, you know what? There's a God in heaven. He could save us. Whether he will or won't, we don't know. The Pasuk says, they told him, we don't know if God will or won't. But he could save us from your hand, and he's the only one we're going to bow to. We're not bowing to your idol. At which point was decreed that they should be thrown into the furnace. So our sages say, where'd they learn this out from, that they're supposed to give up their lives to go into a burning furnace? So one understanding says they learned it from the frogs. That the frogs here, God said, you do what I say, you jump into the furnace. And they did. They jumped into the ovens. God told the frogs, go into the ovens. So the frogs did. So Hananiah, Mishael, and Azariah learned from the frogs. So you have to ask yourselves, how do you learn from animals? Okay.
The Egyptians benefited in one way on this place, right?
We'll see. We'll get there. What, frogs?
Frog way.
There was disputes and war between the neighboring countries about borderland. And because the frogs would only go on Egypt land, that would specifically show that the border of Egypt is there. And it caused peace between the neighboring lands.
When was this?
Right?
Yeah. There's a message that way. Very nice.
You are
a
midrash machine. Just
Very good.